Okay, here we go. Stand by.
3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
Mother's Day, of course, being this weekend before. And I think I may be a horrible son. Now, I'm not asking for, like, you know, affirmation here. But I had this weird moment on Mother's Day because my relationship with mom is bad. So everybody else is posting all their stuff, you know, mother's love and mom, thank you for your wonderful sacrifices. And mom, you're the most beautiful thing. And there's flowers and roses and all these wonderful fonts and gold colors. And mom, mom, mom. And that's beautiful. I appreciate that. But I'm not, I'm just not there. Oh, mom, I love you, love you. I'm having a hard time coming up with that in my heart, you know. And there's no doubt the woman would walk through fire for her children and that she sacrificed a lot. But, you know, the baggage of all these theological differences over the years, over a decade, have really, I mean, there's a lot of scar tissue there. And it's hard to get warm and misty about Mother's Day. And I was talking to Natalie and I said, I think I may just be an asshole. You going to call your mother? I don't know if I can. How do you do that whenever you're somewhat estranged? Do you call her up and go, I hope you have a great day today? Right? How do you do that? You going to buy her a gift? What do I buy her? A Bible? I sent her a text. I mean, that's just fucking lame. It's lame. That's all I could muster. And I was sitting there on the couch. And I'm like, Natalie, I may be an asshole. I don't know how I think about it. But, you know, does anybody else go through something like that with a family member? You know, this weird thing where they're like, you're connected by blood. And to a degree, how much do you owe them? Especially a parent who did do a lot and they worked really hard and all that stuff. I don't know. I texted, Happy Mom's Day. That was pretty much it. Asshole. I'm a bad person. I'm getting ready for some travel, man. The world has opened back up. Fort Wayne, Indiana in June. Portland, mid-July. I'll be in Nashville, late July. I'll be in Ontario in August, working on a trip to Minneapolis. And I'm going to do a Texas run. It looks like it'll be Dallas, San Antonio, Houston. I think that's going to happen in the month of August. All the details, just go to my website, SethAndrews.com/events, but it feels good to be out among the living. This broadcast, a potpourri of your comments, questions, rants, whatever. And we'll start with Jason at 435. Jason, are you with me?
I am, Seth. How you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay, well, my son is 13 years old, and I'm pretty excited to teach him how to think, not what to think, and the scientific method and all that. I have a fear, though. My fear is that, you know, I'll show him some research, something on the internet, and my fear is that he'll come back with, oh, this other thing is on the internet, and it says the exact opposite thing. Like, how do I navigate that of there being proof on the internet or some other means, but then there's also so much stuff out there that proves the opposite?
I'm not sure this conversation starts on the internet. I think it starts with training skepticism and questions and understanding that there are whole organizations who have weaponized misinformation out there and that there's a culture of celebrated ignorance. I think this begins with a mindset. You know, beware. there's a lot of great information. There's a lot of misinformation. And then I think you can take that journey with them, right? Here's how I determine what a credible source is. When we realize that the world is a blender of good and bad stuff, that's an understanding which primes us to then go in and check and recheck and read the critics and look at the data and find out what actual experts and evidence have to say about it. It's an imperfect solution, but I think, you know, staying skeptical going in, having the mindset of a critical thinker is the beginning of what I think can be an important journey and helps to tool them up against the pseudoscientists and the scammers and the grifters and the con artists, et cetera. Okay?
That's some good advice. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. I don't feel like I really said anything. Yeah, I don't have a solution other than in my own life. I shared something the other day. What was it? And I did it on a knee jerk. I was like, oh yeah. And I just, because it validated something I'd already thought. And the second I posted it, I thought, wait a minute. What did you just do? Have you checked to see if this is accurate? Oh, it was somebody wearing a t-shirt. And I thought, well, you know, that person wearing this t-shirt validates my point of view. And I thought, no. Wait a minute. I didn't check to see if this has been photoshopped or altered. So I went, and lo and behold, there's the same photograph, but the shirt was blank. Somebody, some third party had gone in and printed their own message and assigned that particular message to this celebrity. And I hadn't checked it. I went back and immediately deleted and apologized for that. That skepticism helped to protect me from propagating bad information. I had somebody in the chat who asked a question, and it's popped up twice, and I didn't want to glaze over it because I think it's compelling. Let me scan back to it quickly. Can I get your opinion on conservative or centrist atheists? And I hear this from time to time. I'm taken to task because I do have more liberal views. Came out of Fox News conservatism, and now I'm what I would consider to be a liberal humanist, and politics are always divisive, etc. I don't want to write anybody off, but I don't feel the need to accommodate someone who might be standing in contrast to my values. Someone says I'm an atheist. Well, that's a declaration of what you aren't about, what you don't believe in. But what do you believe in? What are your values? And if I look at liberal versus conservative, there are a lot of people who make a false equivalence argument, in my opinion. Well, they're all equally bad. They're all equally corrupt, etc. And they reject the whole system. I see this a lot with Bernie supporters, etc. And I just think they're not equal. I'm not saying that liberals, Democrats, etc., are great. I'm not saying there aren't huge problems, but when it comes to the key issues that speak to my values, conservatism, liberalism, if I think, all right, right to die issues, that's liberal. Legalization of drugs, that's liberal. Reproductive choice, holy shit, is that a big one? That's not a conservative point of view. It's not something conservatives are rallying around as a whole. Well, no, it's a liberal thing. Reforming our prison systems, reforming justice and the courts and the police. That's liberal. Not vilifying people of other nations. That's a liberal thing, you know. Healthcare being a right, not a privilege. You know, we treat in this country, guns are a right, healthcare is a privilege. There's something screwed up about that. Well, which party is lined up more with my values? LGBT rights, gay marriage. You think conservatives were lining up to make that happen? Hell no, that was a liberal value. And so that's just where I fall. So, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm vilifying people who hold a conservative point of view. I understand skepticism about government waste, big government, government intrusion, which I consider to be in some ways more of a libertarian position. But I don't give conservatives a pass. And I don't have to give them quarter or a platform simply because they use the word atheist. In my own mind, I don't think those are, in many, many, many cases, humanist values. And if it means you reject me or this show, so be it. I'm not going to apologize for what I consider to be a humanistic point of view, a human rights point of view. You know, racial equality, you see conservatives lining up on that sucker? Absolutely not. Not seeing it. Right? Which party is seeing the rise of white supremacy, white Christian nationalism? It's not the liberals. No, no, no. So that's kind of where I fall. Talking politics is so tedious, but how do you not talk politics? Because it affects everything we are, everything we do. The fabric of our entire lives relates to politics. And so you have to talk about it. You're forced to do it. Let's talk to John. Hi, John. Are you with me?
Hi, Seth. Thanks so much for taking my call. Big fan of yours for a while. Love your books and podcasts and everything. So thank you for everything you do.
Thanks, John.
Wanted to talk a little bit today about the whole change with Roe v. Wade and trying to have discussions with some of our, you know, conservative friends and their thought processes on this over the last couple of days. And reminds me of the discussion Matt Dillahunty had on the Atheist Experience a while back. And I think people are kind of focusing on this the wrong way. They focus it on, oh, you're killing a baby. And it kind of reminded me of what he would say. It's like, it's not killing a baby. It's the premature termination of a pregnancy. And you're aborting the fetus. You're not killing a child. And I think this particular thought gets overlooked a lot.
I wrote a whole chapter on abortion, and it was a tough one. But I tried to be sympathetic to those people who were like I was, who genuinely did believe that there was a human life with a soul created at the moment of conception. And my whole youth, my formative years and my teenage years and my 20s and even into my early 30s, you know, when they talked about abortion, it was always the horror stories. You know, it's the ninth month and they rip the baby out of the womb and, you know, then the doctors twirl their mustaches. Ha, ha, ha. Liberals love to kill babies. You know, it was very much a vilification. And it was a complete lack of understanding about reproductive rights and how it works, right? Female bodily autonomy. And didn't understand how Roe v. Wade actually narrowed and restricted the further along you get into a pregnancy. The vast, vast, vast majority of terminations happen just in the first few weeks of a pregnancy. And the ones that do happen late term are almost always with the unviability of the fetus or the danger, perhaps even a life-threatening danger to the mother, a mother who was desperate for the birth of a child and was shattered when the pregnancy was terminated. I didn't have any of that perspective. You know, we always just thought that moment of conception means there's a little baby with a little arm, you know, at least in spirit, little arms and legs and eyes and ears, and it smiled and, you know, those types of things. You know, it wasn't a cluster of cells that would one day develop into a viable baby. And so, you know, how do we get past this without sex education, reproductive education, which is certainly not something that evangelical conservatives embrace, right? There's a rampant ignorance about what the pregnancy process is, right? The fact that 50%, roughly 50% of all fertilized eggs are actually ejected via menstruation and never make it to full term. We never even thought about stuff like that. So reproductive education, and at the end of the day, how much of it is about control? Rooted in the Bible, where men, largely men, are making a shit ton of these decisions. In Oklahoma, we had the House of Representatives in Oklahoma. I think 80% of them are white guys. And they decided to vote without debate or discussion to make abortion illegal at 6 weeks at a time when many women don't even know they are pregnant. I think that's often about control, theocratic control, a stamp of their religious dogma over an entire culture. With 166 million women in this country, I'm terrified that these people have essentially declared war on free people nationwide. Did I lose you? I either lost John or I put him to sleep with my long diatribe, and this would not be the first time. I tend to ramble and rant. My apologies. Please forgive me. 602, Arizona. Hi, you with me?
Seth, I'm with you.
Wonderful. Thanks for waiting.
Okay.
What's on your mind?
Sure. Well, I was going to talk a little bit about what you brought up at the beginning about Mother's Day and everything. And I lost my mother at the end of 2019. My group of friends this year, it seems to be everybody who lost moms kind of commiserating, and then everybody who still has their mom. So I sympathize with your kind of situation about how are you supposed to feel about it. But one of the things that occurred to me while you were talking, there's a lot of, in my family, a lot of abuse from generation to generation, and a lot of blood is thicker than water comments, and that you forgive everything because you're related to each other. And from a very young age, and I don't know how my mother accomplished this with me, honestly, because I grew up in that environment, but I was always encouraged to question what was going on, and that never flew with me. I found that the people who tended to bring up the blood is thicker than water argument tended to be the worst abusers of other people, whether they were macro abuses or micro abuses. And I think when it comes to parents and grandparents and people that we are instinctively programmed to trust and to love, when they betray that, whether it's in a small way or a big way, it's really hard to get around. And while I was very close to my mother, as an example, I wasn't close to my stepfather. And I remember throughout my teenage years really resenting having to buy him a Father's Day gift. And it wasn't the sense of the money or whatever. It was just the idea that I don't feel anything for wanting to do this. I don't, not that he didn't earn it or something, but that our relationship didn't feel like it fit that because of how he treated me. And in later years when he was better, you know, it felt better to do that. But, and of course, as a teenager, I just kept the peace because that was just easier. But I think all of these things are completely normal, particularly given what you deal with your mom. And that was all I wanted to say, was a word of support on that, because I think that is really where the root of it is. It's not that you don't love your mom. It's not that you don't appreciate her. But when there's a betrayal in there, whether it's disrespectful betrayal or something bigger, it sucks. And it's hard to get around that when there's a holiday or a birthday or something that's celebrating this person, and you feel like society obligates you or some other programming obligates you to do something that you just don't feel sincere about.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, you're right. It's not about appreciation for all she did, but ours does not feel like a gift exchanging type of relationship. You know? Right. Here's a token of affection. It's hard to do that when you're not really feeling a ton of affection. I appreciate the encouragement very much, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Susie, are you with me, Susie?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
I'm good. What can I do for you today?
Well, I've been trying to find your presentation from Free Flow 2022 online, and I can't find it anywhere. Can you help
Were
me?
You at the event in
No, I could
Orlando?
I could not attend.
Okay. The answer to your question is, I gave a speech. It's called Blood Cult, The Weird Wild World of Christian Rituals. And it reframes, it's based a little bit in my book, it reframes how we see quote-unquote normal Christian traditions. Well, I'm, for lack of a better way of saying it, I'm touring with the speech. I gave it in Atlanta at the American Atheist National Convention. I'm going to give it in Portland at the Conference on Death, Grief, and Belief. And then it will release to YouTube. And I'm estimating it will go out late July, and I'll make a big noise. So the speech is not online yet, but it will. I'll release it in YouTube and in podcast form, and that should happen, let's call it, roughly 6 weeks, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate you. Take care. Bye-bye. James at 440. Hi, James. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Steph. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to get your reaction to the idea of reducing or eliminating religious language from our vocabulary, even when talking to our religious neighbors. So, for example, using the phrase ancient religious text instead of Bible. I just think that some of these religious words have so much baggage and secondary meaning with them that one possible way out of this is to just find some different words. You know, use the word deity instead of God, you know, and try to do it in a way that maybe is not too snarky so that people will maybe actually think about what you're saying.
Well, there might be utility in that. I mean, the Bible is the Bible, all right? That's what we call it. It's the name of that particular holy book. So there's utility in defining which ancient religious text you're talking about. But, you know, you're right. We assume in this country, if you say God, the next question should be, well, which God, right? Which deity are you talking about? And I've used this from time to time. But in Christian circles, you just assume Yahweh, Jesus. So there may be some utility there. Reframing, I mean, that's one. I mentioned the speech that I had just given as we take things like communion and baptism and other sort of cult rituals that have been normalized. But if you use different language to talk about them, there might be utility in helping, to expand minds and perceptions as to how people think and feel about them. Sure.
Okay, thanks.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Casey in Wyoming. Hi, are you with me?
Yes, I'm with you.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to mention that I'm actually a longtime listener of yours. I've been listening since 2011, 2012.
Thank you.
And I wanted to mention that a few years ago, you did a show on strange religions, and you went over like Jediism and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And now I am a devoted member of the Church of the Latter-day Dude, thanks to that, that show.
Now, for those who don't know what you're talking about, this is linked directly to Dudism and the character The Dude, played by Jeff Bridges in the film The Big Lebowski. And I am a fellow Dudist priest, so I feel you. You and I are part of the same sort of clergy. That's amazing.
Totally. Well, like I even went so far as to buy all the books that they offered.
I mean, if you could describe Dudism and why you were attracted to Dudism, what would you say to people?
Well, I think it acts as kind of an antidote to the kind of go, 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 go nature of our culture, where like you're always expected to be doing something and doing something productive with your time. And I'm a big believer that sometimes doing nothing is just as useful.
Yeah, I think the vibe is that you have to keep your mind limber, as the film says, right? But it's about not getting caught up in the hamster wheel, taking the moment. Sometimes doing nothing is doing something. Downtime is important to the human experience in this crazy world. And so I think there are some, it's almost kind of a Buddhist kind of a vibe, you know, Buddhism mixed with weed, you know, kind of thing. So, yeah.
And one other thing I wanted to mention is that I actually grew up in kind of a Christian kind of radio culture myself when I was growing up. Like, we always had Christian radio on all the time. Like, I grew up in a very evangelical family. And it's funny because you'll talk about your experience as a radio host, as a Christian radio host, and you'll name off names like Reliant K or, you know, Phil Kagi and stuff like that. I'm like, oh yeah, I grew up with that.
Yeah. We probably walked a lot of the same steps. It's, you know, it's a very, it's a very loyal culture. We weren't huge. I mean, we followed these bands and we rooted for their success. And whenever they came out with a good song, and there are a few good songs in Christian music. I was a Third Day fan and some others, you know, we were always excited to be able to play those. And I don't know, we felt kind of special. You know, we were the David against the Goliath of quote-unquote secular music. Did you feel that way?
A little bit. It will definitely. Well, like, I was the unpleasant person in middle school who was like, hey, you should check out, you like this band? You should check out this Christian version.
Yeah. Phil Kagi sounded a little bit like Paul McCartney. Phil Driscoll sounded a little bit like Joe Cocker. We had the band Sierra. They sounded a bit like Wilson Phillips. It seems like we had sort of a copycat of whatever was popular in the culture. And 6 months later, Christian music would come out with a supposedly an equivalent, almost always a weak ass equivalent, but something that was supposed to pander to that target audience. It was interesting. I do appreciate the call and I wish you the best. I hope that you just take it easy and keep your mind limber out there, my fellow dudist. Okay.
Yeah. Take it easy, Seth.
All right. We'll see you later. While we were chatting, I pulled up, it's Church of the Latter-day Dude. You can go to dudeism.com, D-U-D-E-I-S-M. Just take it easy, mankind, the website says. Come join the slowest growing religion in the world, Dudism, an ancient philosophy that preaches non-preachiness, practices as little as possible, and above all, lost my train of thought there. Anyway, if you'd like to find peace on earth and goodwill, man, we'll help you get started right after a little nap. There are over 600,000 ordained Dudist priests worldwide, and you can get ordained on the website. As I recall, I think it's been almost 10 years. I think I talked on the show to the guy who runs the Dudist Church website. I've done so many shows, I'm having a hard time remembering. But I thought it was kind of fun. I mean, if you're going to do a religion, right? I was also an ordained monk. I think I let my vows lapse. I think you're supposed to go online and renew your vows. But just for the hell of it, I became an ordained monk, which you can do on the internet. And you could actually do weddings. And I just had this fantasy, like I could show up and I could be an officiant at a wedding. I just show up in the brown robe with the rope belt, you know, and have the little thing shave the back of my head. And how would you call those little hats that the monks wear? You know, walk in. I was an ordained monk for a while. It was big fun. Our listeners have much more to say. We will continue to field their questions and hear their wisdom on the other side of this short break. Hang on. Patrons get this show early, and they get it totally commercial free. And your support is well appreciated. Patreon.com/SethAndrews. Continuing another broadcast that is pretty much just us talking as we go back to the switchboard. I've got 707. Thanks for waiting. Who's this?
This is Ruth.
Hi, Ruth. What's on your mind?
Well, I've never been religious. It's one of these things where my parents, mom was a Seventh-day Adventist, but my dad was kind of a Buddhist, and he was kind of like the Lebowski character, you know, lay back, log, you know, just enjoy life. And as a non-religious, have you ever talked to somebody who's never had a religious experience in their life? I mean, never, ever. And I find it fascinating that people get trapped in that. And my dad always said, don't ever get trapped. You have to ask questions. But as a mother, I never raised my kids religious. Although you were talking about Christian music, my son, when I was in the car with him, had this loud, obnoxious music on. He said, Mom, look at this. It's Christian rock. Don't understand a word of it. Could give a shit, but the music's good.
When I was a Christian broadcaster, we specifically formatted our radio station to sneak up on people. So back in the early 90s, we were using Jesus in all of our positioning statements. We're excited over Jesus, and, you know, Jesus' music, etc. But when we saw the genre begin to explode, and it did in the mid-90s, we decided, well, we're going to go after a target audience of females 18 to 34, okay? Young moms is who we were going after, because if mom listened almost always in the car, then she would control the radio. She would decide what we were listening to, which meant we got the husband and the kids by default. I mean, this is something the research had borne out, right? We weren't just assuming, oh, women control the radio, but it's something that had been revealed as market researchers were looking out there. We were targeting young families who were thinking, oh, we've got young children, we need to get them in church. You know, this was the mindset. But what we did was we made sure we never talked about God on the radio. We didn't have God in our positioning statements. We didn't have a moment of scripture. We didn't do prayer time. We took all the radio preachers and we took them off the air. And we decided the music will minister, right? And then everything we did sounded just like the pop stations that played secular, non-religious music. And the thinking was someone's cruising along and they're scanning the dial and they may stumble upon a catchy tune that they like and they start listening, not necessarily realizing it's Christian music, especially when they had what they call God or girlfriend songs. They talk about love and happiness and joy, etc., but they didn't necessarily have overt religious lyrics. They're real sneaky. And we were thinking, well, if we can get them hooked before they know, they realize that they're listening to religious music, religious radio, then they'll come back and our ratings go up and we're become more popular and we're higher ranked in the marketplace, etc. And, you know, weird, we also were able to charge more for advertising. It's strange how that worked out. But that's one of the tactics that religious entities used to go after the culture. You know, they are more Christian by being less Christian, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does, because this sounded like old punk rock. I was kind of surprised when his coworker said, you got to listen to this. And he said, it's Christian, but you can't understand a word of it. So,
It's a lot of that's done on purpose. Sometimes they can get slotted or sold in religious retailers and in major market retailers. You'll find them in Walmart, and then you'll find them at Lifeway Christian Store. It's a way to sort of more effectively saturate the market. I appreciate your call so very much, Ruth, and have a great day. See you later.
Oh, thank you, Seth.
Let's do one or two more. I've got Troy at 763. Hi, you there?
Hey, my question, I've been pondering this. I'm a chronic alcoholic. I've been through treatment multiple times. I'm also an atheist, and I was doing really good going to my AA groups, but everything is centered around God. And once the others figured out I was an atheist, and I was very respectful. I stood for the Lord's Prayer, and I, you know, did all that stuff. They basically told me, go away.
They told you to leave because you didn't want to participate in the religious aspects of recovery?
Right. Well, because I didn't want to be a part of faith or finding a higher power. They said, you could find a higher power in anything. It could be your dog. And I'm not real educated or, you know, ridiculously intelligent, but I'm not going to make a god out of a dog.
And for those who don't know what we're talking about, Alcoholics Anonymous is notorious for saying that you need to rely on an other, a third party, a higher power. And they're very nebulous about what this higher power is. They're like, just pick something else to lean on and focus on. And the tragedy of that is that they're saying that the solutions do not exist within you. You must lean into some higher power, some subjectively assigned and appointed higher power. And I think that's hugely tragic. It's not that AA has never helped people, because I genuinely believe that they have, despite their religious overtones. But I also know that there are growing secular alternatives, like secular sobriety. There's one at sossobriety.org that helps people without a religious model in addiction recovery. So those groups, there are not enough of them, but they are starting to exist more and more in the culture. And I don't blame you a bit for disconnecting, for, you know, resisting this idea that solutions must come from without, from something higher than you. I think the solutions really are within you, right?
Well, yes, but I also believe there are things that are greater than me. They may not be a god or whatever, but...
What do you mean by greater?
Well, looking out my window and seeing the rainfall from the clouds, that's greater than me.
Yeah, like we live in a universe far beyond us that doesn't really care if we exist. The elements are unconcerned with us. We are not the center of all things. I totally get that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I would love to see you do some research or, you know, do a show on something like that. I live in Minnesota, and to find an atheist group, you know, it's a pretty liberal state, but man, there's nothing.
Which part of Minnesota do you live in?
Really close to Minneapolis.
Okay. By the way, I should be out there in August. I'm hoping to get details in the next few weeks. I believe there are a couple of groups up there that are really thriving. There's Minnesota Atheists, and I think they're called Minnesota Humanists. So a couple of groups that you might Google and look into, and perhaps they would help, you know, connect you and become a community for you and help support you in your journey, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks, Seth.
All right. Thanks for calling, Troy. Be good. Take care.
All right.
We may have to do another show on non-religious addiction recovery. I think addiction is something that affects so many people, even if it's not something that has hit you in your own person. You know, we know people who struggle with addiction, whether it's alcohol or drugs or gambling or something like that. And how do you do that when, you know, almost all, it seems, of the addiction recovery programs seem like church services. It's so freaking frustrating. 646. Hi, thanks for calling. What's your name?
Yes. Hi, how are you? This is Rocio.
Lucille?
Rocio. Yes.
Spell it for me.
R-O-Z-I-O. Rocio. The C sounds like
it. Thank you. Thank you. Well, my connection's not great, and I'm an idiot. So, Rocio, thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind today?
Yes, I actually need your input. I was born and raised very religious, so much that I, as a 7, 8 years old, I will question my pastors with questions. And I was at evangelical, and then I became a Seventh-day Adventist. And then as an adult, I'm 47 years old now. And as an adult, I decided to go and get my bachelor in religious studies. Today, I consider myself a non-believer. However, there are a few things in my mind or in my history that I have issues to understanding, that I have problem understanding. There are a few things that I had some not religious experience. I did get that on church and everything. But I also had premonitions experience. And that I had two big ones in my life. And that is the only reason that I said, what about if it's something there?
To make sure I'm understanding, you consider yourself non-religious, but you had an experience, a premonition, what, a feeling, a thought, an intuition that something was about to happen. That thing then happened. And you find that too big a deal to ignore. And it makes you wonder if there might be another, perhaps otherworldly force that brought that into your mind and heart.
Exactly. I'm the youngest of 10 siblings. And one of my siblings, a boy, was involved in the accident. And I talk about it before it happened. I did. Please, nonsense. And then when it happened, everybody was, oh, my God, this happened. But it was exactly. And also, I'm 47. That happens like when I was 24. And today, that is the only reason why I feel like, oh, shoot, is it possible that something is up there? So I'm really looking for your input. If you know anything about that topic, or if you know any authors that you could recommend it for me to read. Thank you.
I wish I had a better answer for you, but I don't have one. I don't understand beyond coincidence. And it would be a striking coincidence. You have a dream or you have a feeling. And I think many of us have had moments in our lives when, you know, you wake up from dreaming something specific, and then a related incident, sometimes strikingly accurate, happens, and you think there must be a connection. Is that simply a serendipitous convergence of things, or was there another element at play, perhaps an otherworldly element? All I have in my own mind to navigate that is, what evidence can I bring? You know, am I able to measure this sort of third-party force that put the premonition in my brain? I simply cannot. I can't see it. I can't measure it. I can't smell it, taste it. I can't hear it. I can't do any of those types of things. So until that is demonstrated, I tend to fall on the Occam's razor side of it and say, well, it's probably just a very strong coincidence. It's one of those life things where we often have very complex thoughts and feelings, and they happen to converge with a real life experience. But beyond that, I can't say it wasn't some higher power somewhere, because I just don't have the evidence for you. At the end of the day, though, I appreciate the fact that you're curious about it. You're skeptical about it. You're interested in it. You want to know more about it. And if it's real, you would want to know that as well. I think that's pretty cool. So don't punish yourself for having questions or curiosity or even leaning into it a little bit. I think that curiosity can bring about great things, okay?
Thank you.
I appreciate you so very much.
Rocio,
thanks for calling. Rocio, I appreciate you teaching me a new name. It's lovely. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
All right. We'll see you later. I wish I had the answer. I dreamed that I would get a phone call from my distant relative and they would inform me about X. And a month later it happens. And you say, this can't be a coincidence. Well, the truth is, it can. It's a striking coincidence. It would be a pretty amazing coincidence. But how would I differentiate between that and the universe sort of organizing, laying all the dominoes in place so that this might happen? What purpose would it serve? Like if you knew about the accident of a relative in advance, you dreamed about it, what would you then do with the information? Are you supposed to change your behavior? Do you not get in the car? Do you not take the trip? Do you call in sick to work that day? Or if calling in sick to work might actually make the accident happen then, is it preventable? What are the instructions? What's the purpose of those things? These are, I think, very compelling questions. I've got Fidel Montoya. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I called to talk about Christopher Hitchens. And you and I have kind of a similar road to atheism, I think, both of us. Anyway, my question is Christopher Hitchens, and I think it was a rabbi, I think, there was a debate that I think both you and I, it got us started on like really rethinking what the hell do we believe. So now Christopher Hitchens is gone, and I think there's so many issues that's going on right now, and I'm just wondering if you could put your best Christopher Hitchens hat on right now. What do you think he's thinking about? What's going on nowadays, especially with things regarding religion?
You know, I'm not... Hitch was an imperfect person, as we all are. And we stood apart on a few things. But that debate with Rabbi Shmuley Botiek at the 92nd Street Y in 2000, I think it was 7 or 2008, which is on YouTube, changed my life, propelled my journey forward. And he had a way of recalling information, assembling, disseminating, communicating information that I think has not been paralleled. You know, Stephen Fry might be close. But as far as just listening to the tenor of his voice, his presentation, he just had me on the edge of my seat. He would look around. Yeah, I'm sure he would look at this overreach by the Supreme Court, by the evangelical zealots against the reproductive rights of women, and he'd be aghast. I'm sure he would see the theocrats. You know, he would have seen the previous administration weaponizing evangelical celebrities like Paula White. And, you know, he just roasted evangelical celebrities like Jerry Falwell and Falwell Jr. and Franklin Graham. See, he was just ruthless with them. Yeah. Beyond that, I appreciated about Hitch that he didn't take a soft approach to Islam. He was very, very critical and hard on Islam and its assault on women, its assault on human rights, on the Quranic assault on history, science, basic human decency. He didn't hold to, and neither do I, that Islamophobia is a thing. I think there is anti-Muslim bigotry, but I also realize the vast majority of people who are oppressed by Islam are, in fact, Muslims. So those two are different things. And he was a hardliner on Islam, and I think he would continue to be so. I miss his voice. You know, I think he would be a power player in the conversations out there today.
And I appreciate your take on that. Thanks very much. That's all I wanted to talk about. I loved Hitch, and I just really wish he'd been around in these past few months.
Yeah, we could certainly use him.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Appreciate the call, Fidel.
Yeah, appreciate you taking my call.
You betcha. Take care. We did on the 10th anniversary of his death last fall. I released an entire broadcast featuring just the words, his own words, recordings of Christopher Hitchens. And, you know, the guy had a razor tongue and an extremely sharp mind. And that show is worth revisiting. I think it dates back to November of 2021. You can easily Google search it. You can find it on Spreaker and Stitcher and iTunes and all major podcast platforms out there. took the liberty of pulling up a little excerpt here from the 2008 Christopher Hitchens book, God is Not Great. I guess we'll finish with a little hitch. In this segment, he said, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things." Of course, he pulled that from Scripture. He said, "I chose this because of its haunting and elusive character, which will be with me at the last hour, and for its essentially secular injunction, and because it's shown out from the wasteland of rant and complaint and nonsense and bullying which surrounds it. The argument with faith is the foundation and origin of all arguments, because it is the beginning, but not the end, of all arguments about philosophy, science, history, and human nature. It is also the beginning, but by no means the end, of all disputes about the good life and the just city. Religious faith is, precisely because we are still evolving creatures, ineradicable. It will never die out, or at least not until we get over our fear of death and of the dark and of the unknown and of each other. For this reason, I would not prohibit it, even if I thought I could. Very generous of me, you may say. But will the religious grant me the same indulgence? I ask because there is a real and serious difference between me and my religious friends, and the real and serious friends are sufficiently honest to admit it. I would be quite content to go to their children's bar mitzvahs, to marvel at their Gothic cathedrals, to respect, quote-unquote, respect their belief that the Quran was dictated, though exclusively in Arabic, to an illiterate merchant, or to interest myself in Wicca and Hindu and Jain consolations. And as it happens, I will continue to do this without insisting on the polite reciprocal condition, which is that they, in turn, leave me alone. But this religion is ultimately incapable of doing. As I write these words, and as you read them, people of faith are in their different ways planning your and my destruction, and the destruction of all the hard-won human attainments that I have touched upon. Religion poisons everything." Takes a pretty hard line. I don't know. What do you think about that? Does religion poison everything? I will leave you with those words. Be safe. Be good. And I'll catch you back here next week.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.